You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. We continue 4 minutes after eight here on the West Coast. Joining me from Kansas City is Will Cosentini. Will, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mac. How are you?
I'm all right. Will, a graduate of the United States Naval Academy, an infantry officer, battalion commander in Iraq in 2004, and ended his military career as what?
What's your military assistant to the assistant commandant?
Okay, military assistant to the assistant commandant. And explain when you crossed paths with Michael Musselman.
Musselman was Gunny Musselman, got promoted to Gunner Musselman at first LAR, and was the first gunner to refuse to go to school because he was deployed forward and didn't want to miss the war. So I joined the battalion, I joined the division in Baghdad after the statue fell, and then I went home with 1st LAR in, I think, a day after Memorial Day in 2003. And Gunner Musselman, promoted, but not schooled, was there, and then he left to go to school. And then he actually came to work for me at Weapons Training Battalion.
That's all right. We can deal with it. The hey, what was Mike like as a gunny? You know, to me,
I never knew him. I mean, he was a gunny with Duffy, Duffy White, and then got promoted. He was the master gunner, and he was actually the gunner in Duffy's vehicle. For the war, but I never knew him. I only knew him as a CW2 gunner and above.
If there was a guy ever that had everything you wanted in a company gunny or whatever gunny, Musselman, all the personality, the bad attitude, the screaming and yelling, the comedy show, and then smart as shit and a good leader. You could gunny. Oh my God, he would have been a riot to have around. So
yeah, I'm not sure if he had a criminal mindset or not, and if he did, he would have been frighteningly dangerous. Company gunny.
I don't think he goes anywhere without it. The you're a foreign area officer with expertise in Egypt. Pretty sobering developments in the Middle East relative to Israel and Iran over the weekend. That's serious shit.
Yeah, and you know, the Israeli-Iranian relationship it's interesting. You know, you go back to the foundation of the State of Israel. Iran was the second Muslim country to recognize Israel after Turkey. Both of them were fairly secular at the time. And then the Iranians and the Israelis had good relations during the period of the Shah. And the Israelis actually significantly helped Iran at the beginning of the Iran-Iraq war, even though Khomeini was there. And then, you know, relations significantly soured during the next 20-odd years. And I think the time of Ahmadinejad, you know, lobbing rhetorical grenades at Israel was one of the ways that you kept on the good side of the masses in Iran. And now Iran is potentially an existential threat to Israel. They developed nuclear weapons. They absolutely armed Hezbollah with tens of thousands of rockets and missiles that have rained down on Israel from Lebanon previously. I think the Israelis have have figured out they're going to try and nip that supply chain in the bud as far up the chain as they can. So I think they have very good intelligence in Lebanon and in Syria. And when they find stockpiles of Iranian-supplied weapons, they go after them. And I think the Israelis, you know, if anyone ever really fundamentally knew the idea that you don't appease, it's them. So Syrian / Iranian send a drone over Golan and in Israel. The Israelis shoot it down, and then they respond with, I don't know how many F-16s, but probably a whole lot. Take some significant targets out. They lose an F-16 on the way home, probably to a Russian-improved air defense system in Syria, and they come back and hammer them again. And the Israelis know, you show weakness over there, and you won't be there for long. And so where is Iran in all of this now? Are they trying to divert attention from internal unrest? And so maybe they can spin this to their domestic audience. You know, I don't know. But it's, I wouldn't say things are on a hair trigger, but they're probably a little bit closer than they were a couple of weeks ago. But that's been a pretty hot Cold War that's been going on there for, I don't know, 10 years, maybe more. Israel, Iran, Syria. So,
okay, let's talk about it. Jack Keane was on Fox News this morning. I enjoy his commentary, and always pretty insightful. The last incursion that Israel made into southern Lebanon did not go according to plan, and they described the bunker system that had been installed there as Iwo Jima-esque in terms of interlocking, things that they'd never seen in the area before, as well as the rockets that they had up there. So that's to their north. And then are we going to see more just conventional rocketry, Iranian in Syria, that Israel begins to have to look at when they look to the east?
Well, I mean, I guess you can see more. There are literally tens of thousands of Iranian supplied rockets in Syria and Lebanon, now. And the Israelis, I think, have taken steps over the years. I mean, I think they're routinely bombing up there when they get good targets, because they want to fight them at an airport as they're being offloaded, as opposed to fighting them once they're in place, because they've been placed in main population centers, etc. If you it might be on YouTube, I don't know what company is. You go back and you can see the last significant strike they did, I don't know how many years ago it was. You know, the Israelis are shooting at anti-air or at missile emplacements that are literally in the middle of population centers, hospitals, schools, etc. And the Western media absolutely blasted them for it. And the Israelis, I think they backed down a little bit on it. But there's thousands and thousands of missiles in Syria and in Lebanon.
In
the airport.
No, that's all right. We got it. Which is essentially what North Korea has done conventionally to Seoul, yes?
Yeah, but it might be a little bit different in that I don't know North Korea that well,
right.
But I think that their positions are just extremely well dug in,
right,
and camouflaged conventionally. I think that the Iranian missile, Syrian positions, Hezbollah positions are embedded in population centers. A little bit different style of camouflage, so that if you can't win the war by shooting the missile, you can win the information war by showing how brutal the Israelis are by attacking all these innocent civilians, you know, in hospitals and whatever.
Got it. Email question. Hey, Matt, why would the Iranians do this? They know that the Israelis have their finger on the trigger, and that trigger is off safe. Why would they invite this by flying that into Iranian airspace? Any idea?
I mean, you know, there's a lot of unrest in Iran right now, and so the easiest answer to me is help focus on the enemy outside the country as opposed to, you know, the potential enemy of whoever is out there protesting in the streets. That might be one thing. Second, it's just their long-term strategy of constantly pick to see what they can get. You know, they've got an ideological sort of anti-Israeli spin. They want to be seen as the power center in the Middle East, and the easiest way to do that is to knock off the big dog, you know. And what do they really suffer? Okay, are the Israelis going to drop a nuke on Tehran? Well, I don't know. I mean, probably not over a drone overflight. And be interesting how this comes out in the media as well. I haven't really paid all that close attention, but typically when Israel bombs targets in Syria or in Lebanon, you know, they get blasted. Now, this time the U.S. immediately came to their defense. And I don't know what the Russians did or not.
I haven't seen any comment by the Russians yet.
Yeah, but at least the U.S. immediately came to Israel's defense. But that also helps play to Iranian domestic propaganda. You know, look, the U.S. President Trump sort of supported the people in the streets, whatever it was, a month or two ago,
right.
But look, he's just a stooge of the Israelis. Yeah, it may be a simple of that, it may be a lot more complicated. And unfortunately, being outside the intel circle, it's
hard
to tell.
Right. My guest, retired Marine Colonel, foreign area officer expertise in the region, Will Cosentini. We're talking about Iranian and Israeli events over the weekend. Mac, can you ask him his thoughts on what the Arab reaction would be, knowing the Arab-Iranian split? So what's the Arab reaction to all this?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be
go
something
Israel
to see. Because,
go Israel?
Well, not on the front page, but maybe behind the scenes for sure. I mean, the Saudis, you know, there's this idea that there may be some rapprochement between Saudi Arabia and Israel, and Saudis are becoming less sort of fundamentalist at home, the new guy coming in. So behind the scenes, they would love to see, Iran get smacked around a little bit. I don't know if there's a united Arab reaction, Sunni Arab reaction after. I don't know that there is.
Okay, but if I put you on the spot and said, hey, look into your crystal ball, the front page reaction is going to be muted, but the back page is going to be kick their ass and knock them back down because they are becoming, it seems like they want to be the beast in the Middle East, and we'll take any help we can get to knock them back into the borders of Iran.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Next question. Here's another interesting question. In terms of IO, do the Israelis need to start laying the foundation in terms of images where these rockets are and the fact that if this continues, there's going to be casualties that they don't want to see? Is that now a fundamental part of offensive operation, is laying the information out there, doing information operations so that when it happens, the Israelis can say, we told you so, they want this to happen?
Yeah, I think that they tried to do that the last major operations they had in South Lebanon. and I'm sort of blanking on when the dates were. But I think they made a pretty good case out there, and they had some pretty explicit briefs, and they got freaking blasted. From Western Press, New York Times, European papers, et cetera. So they lost that information campaign. And I don't know that they had the ability to do, I mean, sure they could do more than they did last time, but, you know, people should go take a look. I haven't looked in a long time, but I think you can find stuff out on YouTube that sort of shows what they were showing, and it's pretty obvious.
So what would the search on YouTube be? Syrian rocket batteries in?
Yeah, I would go Israel-Lebanon war type of things, Israel attacks, Lebanese positions, something like that. And I'd have to cross-reference some times and dates. But okay. I know I've seen a lot of video.
Okay. All right.
And it's obvious. And they were doing the briefings and putting the stuff out, and they just got slaughtered. They were overwhelmed on the information side. I can't remember where the U.S. was on this, how aggressive we were in trying to support them or not. In the end, they're going to do whatever they're going to do to protect themselves.
Well,
public opinion be damned.
Right, and they have to. And again, look, the New York Times can say whatever they want, but if the Canadians were shooting missiles into New York City from the inner city in Quebec, do you think the New York Times would say, "Hey, boys, we can't shoot. After all, these things aren't an urban area, and innocent people might get killed." No,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, and you're missing the point there. The New York City, the Canadian border is 300 miles. Hey, if they were shooting into Buffalo across the river,
right,
you know,
right,
that's what it is. That's how much reaction time they have. I mean, Ben Gurion Airport is, I don't know, 15 miles from the West Bank. You know, Israel is, Jerusalem is 50 miles, 60 miles maybe to, Tel Aviv, so from the sea to the capital is 60 miles. And from Golan down to, I mean, it's 100 miles and change, but it ain't a big place. I mean, it's a freaking portion stamp. So, 10,000, not 10,000, tens of thousands of rockets.
Came in. Crazy. Our departure time is 12:05.
My guest this morning is Will Cosentini. He's getting ready to get on a plane and do some flying, but has been gracious enough to join us. Another email. So what's next, boys? So since you're the expert this morning, what's next?
I sense that the Iranians may be less overt. That they'll go to a little bit more of a quiet period. They'll be a little bit deterred, and they'll try and find a different way to push buttons some other time, some other place. Because I think, you know, the Israelis, if they go full-fledged in there, what's going to happen with all the Russian anti-air defenses? The Russians actually don't want to have Israel wipe their air defense off the face of Syria if they've been spending money and providing assistance there. So I think there might be a little bit of a calming effect. But at some point in the future, there's going to be reckoning, one way or another. Who can predict the future? I don't think it'll be soon. I think this will...
Okay, so this is one of those long marches to some kind of place. I said a while ago, we need to confront, this morning I said this, we need to confront Iran conventionally, mano-a-mano, to include and provoke the confrontation if we have to, because fighting their proxies is quagmire loser stuff. And they need to get their pants pulled down, because this risks the whole Middle East card table going head over heels. The cards, the dip, the beer, everything's going to go in the air, right? And so,
yeah. But there's a political party in the United States that controls what, 48% of the popular opinion, maybe more in some places, that handed them their cake and told them they could eat it as well. You know, 2 years ago,
right?
Who ever heard of a wackiness of, we're going to have a treaty, but we don't want to make it a treaty because we know it won't withstand scrutiny in the Senate. And so we're going to give you billions of dollars in cash money up front, and you're going to promise to be good because, you know, your promises have been trustworthy over the years. And that political party can't back away from that now. If I remember right, General Mattis got a little bit of short toured in CENTCOM. I think part of that was that he was a little more hard line on Iran, than the administration wanted to be. That's speculation on my part.
And again, that's been speculated by a lot of people. And I'll tell you what, and he's been consistent in that criticism. The most stabilizing influence in the entire region is the Iranians, and they have been on the march since.
Yeah, and look, and we were talking about what heroes, those two Navy small boats, what heroes they were to surrender. If there was ever an opportunity to absolutely remove the Iranian Navy and small boats from the face of the earth, you know, what would Ernest King, Chester Nimitz, and Bull Haldren have done? Yeah, a fucking break. But our political, there's significant parts of our political system on the left and the right. And look, I don't want to be an interventionist.
Right?
But we told these people they could build a nuke. That's crazy. We told them they could build a nuke. Some say, oh, no, that's not what the Iranian deal is. Stop. We told them they could build a nuke. So are we going to confront them eventually? Yeah, we're going to confront them. I don't know if we'll have the time and place of our choosing or not.
And that's my point. My point is that we need to put them back in a box and fighting their proxies where they decide that they're going to choreograph and orchestrate it, and then fighting their proxies. Look, we're not going to fight your proxies. We're going to sink your Navy. Right? We're going to hammer your Air Force. We're going to knock the living shit out of you. And then, you know, you can decide what you're going to do with your proxies, but we're done with this.
Think of the civil war that will occur in our nation's capital because one party is so beholden. This is a signature achievement of the last administration.
Yeah. No.
Right? Not very many signature achievements. This is one. Allowing them to build a nuke. And now we're going to go in there and kick them in the shins and maybe a little bit higher. That's tough.
Yeah.
There's no bipartisan in that. And there's a whole lot of Republicans that wouldn't be for it either.
Well, hey, look, you're going to fight. We've been fighting them, right?
Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing.
We've been fighting them, so and ask our Arab allies what they would like to see. I mean, can you imagine how excited they were in Saudi Arabia when they saw this news?
Yeah.
Knock the shit out of those guys, because they are. Let me read you one more email. I know you got to go, Mac. We pretend China doesn't encroach in the South China Sea. My opinion after listening to Grant Newsham is they will shortly do that in the East China Sea. We've kicked the Korean thing down the road as far as we could possibly kick it. We've allowed the Iranians to destabilize that entire region and fight their proxies. At some point, the United States has got to convene a Council of Nations in the Pacific and Atlantic and say, look, we've all got to come together, reconstitute our militaries so we don't have to fight these guys and we keep them in a can. If not, We will continue to see the same shit, be involved in the same type of conflicts, because they perceive they can win these. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah.
Our weakness, our allies' weakness.
Yeah, so we fought a war of choice in many ways in 2003.
Yes,
right. And we could have fought a punitive campaign in Afghanistan and walked. And we didn't do that. We're still there. And so the interventionist side of the American public is a lot smaller than it's been in a long time.
Right.
I think. And this idea that we're going to get a bunch of people that think like us out there to band together. How many people out there think like us?
None.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, the guy in the Philippines is a bit of a wacko. We need them. We got people on TV talking about, at the Olympics, supposed experts saying, everyone in Korea loves the Japanese and emulates. Right?
Yeah. Look, when you see that get said on TV, right, you grab the remote and, like, where's SpongeBob? Oh, give me something at least that's entertaining.
And the people that say that are former fellows of the Council of Foreign Relations.
That's, yeah. Yeah, you don't have to spend a morning in Japan before you know they don't like in Korea before you know they don't like the Japanese.
Yeah, read a book. It ain't hard to figure out. And so, where is this great population of everybody that thinks like us and that's going to do these things? There ain't a lot out there, and we burned a lot of capital in the last 15 years on both sides of our political spectrum. And when people look at the U.S., what do they see?
Vassal.
They see the monolith.
Yeah, vassal.
They see the diversity of insanity that we have.
Right.
Right?
Right.
It's one of the downsides of being a divided, politically divided nation. Is that the what is the voice that we're speaking with? And, oh, by the way, we spoke with a voice until January of 2017. Now we're speaking with a different voice, but I'm not sure I know what that voice is right now. And how long is this guy going to last? Well, if you're a foreigner reading the U.S. newspapers, you're thinking he's going to be out on the street next week. So why would you band together with anything associated with the U.S.? You know? Crazy.
Yeah. No, without
That's
a doubt.
Why
Don't
it
read
it. Happen.
Okay. All right, so bottom line is you expect the Iranians to dial this back and walk it sideways and not much more to happen.
Yeah, and I'm very wishy-washy on that prognostication. I mean, I think it's more likely than not. But I'd love to see the intel. So.
All right. First of all, I appreciate you hopping on with us this morning on short notice. Travel safe, and I'll talk to you.
All righty. Thanks, Max.
You bet. No, always a pleasure. Thank you. That is Will Cosentini. He's a smart guy. The Iranians, man. I'm sick of them. Straight up sick of them. We're gonna take a break. I'm. Let's see. If I had to predict, what would I say? If the Iranians are doing that, what they believe is they're trying to bait, the Israelis and then that at the end of whatever dust up they have, the Iranians are in a better place. So it means that they are comfortable enough with what they have in position in Syria to begin to deliberately violate Israeli airspace, knowing that there would be a response. So if you look at it from the Iranian perspective, why do this? Why do this? Now, evidently the drone that they were flying is some version of a stealth drone. based on American technology that was probably stolen or, you know, got from some spies. Or our cybersecurity sucks ass. Anyway, so were they developing targets? What were they looking at? They collecting targets information? You would think they could steal that from us as well or get it online or something. We'll take a break. My thanks again to Will Cosentino for coming on. there's a few more news headlines that we'll get to and as we head towards the top of the hour. And the one and only Michael Musselman. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio on Tuesday coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled machine anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world, leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the group can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs at allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'll read you a couple report from CNN. Let's see. We'll see if this is any good. This is a interesting little piece of video. We'll see if it can play without six commercials running in front of it. Yeah, don't get your hopes up, sports fan. Israel, the Iranian drone we shot down was based on a captured U.S. drone. Always nice. Videos trying to play. Some kind of CNN report.
A thermal camera tracks a drone in the early morning hours. Israeli officials say it's Iranian and give the series of events.
The translation of that is, you have permission. And now the video goes on.
The command to shoot comes after it penetrates Israel's airspace, an attack helicopter giving the final blow. The unmanned drone originated near Palmyra in Syria at an Iranian base called T-4, that according to Israeli officials. Eight fighter jets scrambled to take out the command and control center. They encountered heavy Syrian anti-aircraft fire, triggering sirens across northern Israel and the Golan Heights.
Before 5 o'clock in the morning, we hear the sirens, two sirens. I take my wife and my children. We take them to the shelter. And now we hear airplanes in the air.
Amid the heavy fire, an F-16 crashes. The pilot and co-pilot eject safely, one seriously injured, the other lightly. A helicopter takes the pilot to a hospital. Israel's military...
First time
he says, this is the first plane they've lost in combat in decades. In retaliation, Israel launches another wave of airstrikes, targeting both Syrian and Iranian positions, including anti-aircraft batteries. Israel's prime minister had this message for Iran.
Israel holds Iran and its Syrian host responsible for today's aggression.
Serious stuff.
We will continue to do whatever is necessary to protect our sovereignty and our security.
The incident raising tensions in the Golan Heights to a new level. Israeli leaders have been watching the ongoing civil war in Syria just right over there for years. One thing that concerns them the most is someday, when they're looking over this frontier, they'll see Iranian soldiers looking back. Israeli officials have warned against an Iranian military buildup in Syria, and Israeli warplanes have launched dozens of strikes on advanced weapons targets over recent years. For its part, Iran is warning Israel against further military action, calling the downing of an Iranian drone ridiculous. Iran's foreign ministry saying Iran has a legitimate right to be in Syria. This latest clash could mark a turning point. With Israel's long-enjoyed air supremacy in the region taking a hit. Ian Lee, CNN, in the Golan Heights.
Pretty interesting stuff, right? Those people evolve target lists on a daily basis. Interesting stuff. New York Times, some of the reporting New York Times does, I would tell you, I do not read, but I would tell you normally when they cover military events, international events, I think they do pretty decent stuff. This is from an Israeli publication. The website's called Haaretz. I'm probably pronouncing that horribly, but Haaretz. Israel believes round of hostilities with Iran and Syria is over, but another is all but inevitable. Bullet points. At first, Israel and Iran are engaged in a head-to-head confrontation in Syria. Two, Israeli strikes in Syria risk forcing Russia to adopt a pro-Iranian stance. As Syria and Iran threaten Israel, America signals its ally is on its own. How about that? Israel's security establishment believes the current round of fighting with Iran and Syria in the north, during which Israel struck targets in Syria with an F-16 fighter jet, one of them was shot down, has all but come to an end. The widely agreed upon assessment is that the sides have achieved all they could in this current round. However, Israel also believes that in the long run, another clash with the Iranians in Syria is almost inevitable. These assessments rely, among other things, on statements made by senior Iranian figures over the last 24 hours. Iran and Syria are looking to strategically leverage the unusual achievement of shooting down a plane through public declarations about having changed the rules of the game in the north and threatening a severe response to any additional Israeli attacks. And then there's a pretty interesting little map here. At 04, the drone departs from Iranian-based T-1. Two, Israeli military attacks the drone's command and control at 0500, at 0430, I'm sorry, I went out of sequence. At 0430, an Israeli helicopter intercepts the drone inside Israel and shoots it down. At 0530, Israeli military aircraft attacks the drone's command and control vehicle. And then at 0530, also an Israeli plane was shot down by an anti-aircraft missile. And that's just to the east of Haifa, which is in along the northern part of Israel, just south of the Lebanese border. Local authorities in the Golan Heights and in Galilee were instructed by the Israeli army to return to their normal routine. On Sunday, local situation rooms returned to normal after a day of high alert. How about that, local situation rooms? Pretty amazing. The Israeli military said it shot down an Iranian drone on Saturday, which infiltrated Israeli airspace. The Israeli Air Force said this was the largest and most significant strike in Syria since 1982. 26 years. So, interesting stuff going on, there. And then the New York Times has five takeaways from this. So we'll take a look at that. And the picture that goes with it is, it looks like, to, you know, a company of Israeli soldiers online walking through the area in which the their F-16 crashed, looking for anything that might have, you know, blown away from the crash site, anything classified, anything. Israel's cross-border clash with Syrian and Iranian forces on Saturday was a sharp escalation of a long brewing hostility along its northern frontier and a bracing alert to those who have focused on other areas of the Syrian civil war, on other aspects of Iran's strategic assertiveness, or who believe that Israel's air superiority left it invincible in its own skies. You know what? Invincible doesn't mean, you know, and the Israelis have done it. I mean, this stuff is this because they had an aircraft, you know, that was hit, both pilots ejected and are alive. That's a victory, right? That tells you how dominant the Israelis have been, obviously militarily. Five takeaways though. One, it isn't over. It's just the beginning. Two, Israel alone can't stop Iran and Syria. Three, the U.S. is focused elsewhere. While the Trump administration on Saturday did voice support for Israel's right to defend itself, it has offered it no help with Iran, its proxies, and the Syrian regime. Quote, all Israelis notice this. You know what? To be honest with you, that's bullshit. Next one. Russia can't stay neutral for long, so this essentially puts Russia on the proverbial horns of a dilemma. Russia has played its hand expertly in Syria up till now, Israeli strategists say. It has cooperated with Iran. Aiding the Assad regime, but also has communicated closely with the Israelis, allowing Israel to act militarily against the two. But the intensifying conflict could make it difficult for Russia to retain that detachment. I believe the Russians want a Pax Russiana to stabilize their achievements, and their achievements are formidable, said Mr. Terzel, an Israeli intelligence official. I think they understand that the presence of Iranian military and Shiite military in Syria has the potential to destroy all their gains. They don't want that. Mr. Zalberg said Russia has been something of a friend to me, made a new word, to both Israel and Iran so far, but now faces a huge dilemma. Which side do they fall on? Next takeaway, and the last one. Israeli jets aren't invincible. There was much keening in the Israeli press over Saturday's biggest surprise, that an Israeli F-16 could be lost during a combat mission, the first loss since 1982. Israelis had grown accustomed that no one in the region would be able to threaten our aircraft. Assad's men will try hard to achieve more accomplishments like this. So big shot. Bottom line, they're not invincible. No kidding. So again, just one of the, you know, it's interesting how the world turns in a second. And it certainly turned over the course of the weekend. You know, I can't remember what I was doing when I saw that headline. I told you that Associated Press app is a great app because you don't get garbage on there, but legitimate big news stories pop into your phone. Just look at Associated Press News in your Google Play Store or, you know, your App Store, however you do that. And it's awesome, the Associated Press. Anyway, that thing popped up, and I remember, and I looked at it, and I went, uh-oh. Now what? And again, this Iranian thing at some point got to get dealt with. So, all right, let me tell you what we're going to do. This week, I want to say on Thursday, Bo Higgins is going to join us. He's from Amazon, former intel officer in the Marine Corps. So on Thursday, we're going to talk to him. And looking forward to it. He's going to talk about his own transition and what he does at Amazon in terms of helping veterans and recruiting and things like that. So Bo Higgins, he was an intel guy in Iraq, and I'm pretty sure he was in Afghanistan too. So he's an Amazon guy now. So we will we'll talk to him. So we will do all of that, and right after, well, later on this week. But we're going to talk to the man, the myth, the legend himself, the one and only Michael Musselman, coming up here. So looking forward to that. The other thing I've got is Colonel Mike Marletto sent me a PME that General Zinni did. So at some point, probably this week, you'll hear that, maybe tomorrow. I've got to screen it today and then and get it ready, and then you'll hear that. And it's entitled Fighting the Meth. Fighting the Meth. So interesting stuff. A couple emails let me get to. One about North Korea. Anybody who didn't see this coming is an idiot. Obviously, it's starting to hurt, which is a good sign for the rest of us. What's scary, though, is how quick the world wants to embrace him before he does anything. The caustic person in me says that this is a charade, wanting to talk to Pence and all of that. I think deep down we all hope that certain things can happen on the peninsula. One, the negotiated end to the Korean War. Two, in that negotiation, there would be economic aid for North Korea, agricultural aid for North Korea, for which they would pay. In return, they would surrender their nuclear weapons in a verifiable, meaningful way. Otherwise, what you'll have is what we're dealing with in Iran in terms of the same thing. Get what I want, make a deal that you can't verify, and I keep going. That can't happen. I love this whole charades game we're playing with that guy. Next email. This has to do with Iran. Mac, I agree with you, and I also agree with your friend Cosentini. We do need to confront Iran. And if we did it conventionally, as you said, we would smoke them. If we want to play the game of dealing with their proxies, that's a loser game. And they're winning that, if you can't tell. We fought their proxies in Iraq. That didn't go very well. Yeah, I'm. And then he finishes with this. Iran is another house of cards. The people of Iran obviously spoke a month ago. They don't dig all of this. But they don't run the country. The leaders do. So, short of a revolution, which will come someday, exactly as it will come in China, and exactly as it will come in Russia, we will have to deal with Iran. Being weak sucks. Having allies that are weak sucks just as much. It's amazing how we forget the lessons of history. It is amazing. All right, we're gonna take a break. We're gonna check in with Michael Musselman, the one and only, find out how his weekend went. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.